Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Today, my very special guest is Sophia Smallstorm. Sophia Smallstorm is the brains behind the AboutTheSky.com website. Sophia talks about a variety of issues, geoengineering, transbiology, false flag terrorism. The list goes on. She's quite knowledgeable, has a lot of information to share. So without any further ado, Sophia Smallstorm, welcome to the Cosmic Switchboard Show.
Hi, James. Thank you so much for having me. I think it'll be exciting to do a little chat with you, and I don't know where we're going to go in it, but we'll go, right?
Well, we'll just go by feel. For the benefit of our listeners, Sophia, tell us a bit about your background and how you began your voyage of discovery to the point where you're doing the work, the critically important work you're doing now.
You know, one of my favorite sayings is, a straight line is the quickest way to the wrong place. And I followed a very zigzag line. I couldn't even tell you how I got where I am now. But I always hated politics because it was saturated with, you know, Newsweek was just all about war or elections, and none of it interested me when I was younger. And suddenly, after the invasion of Afghanistan and the Iraq War, because those were so over the top, ridiculous, I was very young during the Vietnam War. I was basically, you know, a child, and I didn't really have much understanding going then. But these wars were crazy to me. And so I got interested. And it led to a curiosity about 9/11 once I read something just by chance that the size of the steel beams that supposedly fell down on 9/11 were exactly the same size of the pickup truck beds that were freighting them away. And I thought that was very coincidental and unusual, and that put me on the rabbit trail of 9/11. And then I made this documentary that was popular pretty much worldwide called 9/11 Mysteries. And I went from there, you know. I got into chemtrails, and because I'm kind of science-minded, I really want to know the nitty-gritty of things, how the body works, how these atmospheric conditions can occur. I start looking deep into things, and I pretty much just follow my own path. So my path has now led me to these subjects that sound a little bit esoteric, like beyond biology, metabiology, and we know that we have a wireless world that is spinning around us, and everybody's engaging in it, and what is that really about? So I just try to make dots connect. Big dots, you know, or big wide connections between dots. And to me, that's a kind of creativity. So I'll stop there.
Yes, I was on a similar voyage of discovery. I was aware immediately that 9/11 wasn't all that was cracked up to be. It seemed so staged. It was a classic example of shock and awe. And the point you made about the lengths of steel beam that were cut precisely the length of the flatbed trucks that were hauling them away, and I think they went off to China. That was definitely a red flag. And around that time in the late 90s, I became aware of chemtrails. When I first heard the concept, I thought, okay, that's a crazy kind of concept. But then I began to see them myself, and I realized that, no, there's something to this. I lived in San Diego at the time, and the skies looked like a big waffle iron thing. The skies were crisscrossed with chemtrails. And I said, this cannot be normal, because that's not a normal flight pattern. And what kind of planes are going to be crossing each other's paths and intersecting each other? So I became aware around the late 90s that there's something to this chemtrail issue. And wow, you know, here we are further down the track, and we're seeing people have names for them now, like, you know, chem clouds, chem burst, etc. What's your feeling about how the chemtrails have developed, and what's the ultimate purpose behind the chemtrails?
First of all, The preponderance of chemtrails began after 9/11. There was a little bit of activity in the late 90s. I was never aware of it until 2005. The word chemtrails was new to me in 2004 and 5. So I don't know how you living in San Diego were seeing a crisscross sky, because I never saw any such thing and I was living here at the same time. So I don't know exactly, you know, unless I had my eyes closed or was looking at my feet, and I certainly wasn't that type of person, but I don't know where you would have seen the crisscross to that degree.
I may have gotten the dates mixed up. That could have been after, but I know that I've seen them in the late 90s too. But I did see, you know, after a while, I did see the waffle iron patterns. They were clear as day. In fact, when I lived in University Heights, there was actually a chemtrail pattern right over my house. I could almost set a clock by it. I pointed out to my landlord, look what's happening above. That was probably more like, you know, 2002, 2003, because I moved out of San Diego 2004. So all that happened before I moved out of San Diego.
Yeah, you know, I used to go to the beach and just lie there and look at the evening sky. And we had a condition that it was a type of cloud referred to as a mare's tail when I was growing up. And I lived all over. I lived in Europe. I lived many different countries and the east coast of the U.S. as well. And the mare's tail was a very high cirrus arrangement. It was like a big fan. And so I was seeing things that looked like mare's tails but weren't quite right in the late 90s. And then there would be these patterns also, but I never saw wild crisscross, honestly. But I'm not going to sit here and tell you you couldn't have seen it. It's not possible. But yeah, there were some things that just didn't seem to have names, and I was confused by them. And then when somebody used the word chemtrail for me in 2004 or 5, 3 or 4, maybe it was, I knew what she was talking about. I knew it. I knew those were those lines in the sky that I had been seeing. And of course, you know, it's gotten much more heavy, and now we get a lot of white out, and we get a lot of wispy clouds that, there's no natural cirrus anymore. The cirrus that's being laid out now is very low in elevation, altitude, and it's very much unlike what we used to see, which were ice crystals at 40,000 feet. And they were very, very beautiful. And nothing really that they create now is beautiful. And, you know, it makes me laugh because people still, they go to the beach with their folding chairs and their champagne, and they set themselves up to watch the sunset, and it's all chemtrails.
Yes. What's happening also is it may start off semi-blue, but if you peer closely at the skies, you still see the residual chemtrail. It's like a misty haze that's like almost ever present. And as time goes on, as the day wears on, it gets mistier and mistier, and pretty soon, you know, you just have that white perma chemtrail haze again. So especially the young people, the millennials, they don't have a frame of reference. They don't know what it was like before, you know, when you had normal clouds.
Right. And they're being trained not to gaze up and observe. They're being trained to look down at their phones.
Oh, yes.
So I can't really tell you what the purpose of this is, except that there is a many-fold agenda going on behind everything. There is overall, in my belief, a concerted effort to capsize biology, biological organisms, biological reproduction, biological forms, such that solutions will be brought in by science. We're in the age of science and technology, and there will be replacements, handy replacements offered. As you look at the natural world, if you have any idea of what it should look like, which most of the younger people, as you mentioned, don't, but you can see trees that are ailing, seriously ailing, and they have horrible dry leaves, and a lot of the pine trees, their limbs are kind of bending down, and there's a lot of ultraviolet and aluminum burn on them. I shouldn't say aluminum burn, but the tree roots suck up heavy metals. And my mother mentioned to me that trees were falling down in the last northeastern storm. And I said, that's because the roots are all feeble and weak because they've been in soil that's full of stuff that's being dropped from above, you know, these metals. And the trees are sick and they just don't have the strength to keep standing. So as the trees fall over and the plant forms die out and can't reproduce, one thing you'll notice now, the sycamores are throwing inordinate numbers of what we call ankle breakers, these little burrs that contain their seeds. That's the reproductive effort. And the pine trees are throwing tons of cones. It's called going to cone. And a pine tree should only go to cone, a conifer. I'm speaking categorically of the pines. Once every 10 years. But they're throwing cones all over the place because they know that they're sick and weak and dying, and so they're reproducing like mad, you know? So anyway, the natural world is on its last legs, and this will enable the GMO companies, genetically engineered organism companies, like ArborGen is a big science company working on trees, genetically engineered trees. And then, of course, we have Monsanto, and all these companies are going to offer us replacements that are engineered to cope with the stresses of drought, for instance. So we will be asked to embrace the advent of GE life forms, and then when we are surrounded with them, they will be licensed on an annual basis. So you won't be able to just say, okay, stick one of your trees in my yard and put a different one in the backyard. That'll be fine. I'll take it. You'll have to pay for that tree every year.
Yes, we're already seeing that with the lack of regular seeds that a lot of farmers are not being allowed anymore. They have to go back to these agribusiness cartels and buy next year's seeds instead of the seeds being produced by the plants and having a yearly crop. Now they have to kind of renew their membership every year. So it's gone away from this natural order of things to this more corporate kind of Frankenstein system. And there's been a lot of talk over the years about things in the chemtrails that may be causing illnesses, such as, what are your thoughts about Morgellons? There's a lot of discussion about Morgellons and people have been talking about for some time. Do you believe that's a real issue? And if so, what is it?
Well, once again, you know, I can't tell you what something is or isn't, because these topics are, these situations are very, very complicated, but there is some kind of condition that affects certain people, and it may be latent in everyone, that involves lesions and fibers and emissions of crystalline materials. And I think that our biology is being converted, and certain people are showing the activity of this conversion process, and they are producing from within polymers that have not been seen before, either in the natural or the synthetic world. Now, if you understand the term polymer, a polymer is simply a long chain molecule. There are a lot of polymers in the world. They created synthetic polymers by tweaking biological polymers. So cellulose is a polymer. Polymers give things structure. That's one thing they do. Sugar is a polymer, I believe. And, you know, I used to know a lot more than I'm saying now, because I'm just kind of dabbling with you. But our biopolymers may be undergoing change, and we may be, in a hidden way, unknown to us, there may be some rearrangement going on in our own processes of synthesis inside our bodies, the renewal of tissues and cells, blood. I couldn't say much more than that.
Yeah, the implications are profound, because some of the video I've seen, some of the testimony I've seen, they've got these polymers growing out of people. It's completely unnatural. And I mean, what's it doing to our cellular structure, to our DNA? And that's going to affect life as we know it. And, you know, when you mentioned earlier about the trees, how they're being uprooted so easily too, I mean, that's symptomatic of this whole issue of the pollution of our environment. Do you see perhaps a depopulation agenda? I mean, when you think about all the different ways that the human immune system is under assault and you know, along with the wars and everything else, there seems to be a concerted effort to cull the herd, so to speak.
You know, this word culling, I have redefined it for myself. I do not believe in an active depopulation agenda in the sense that they're killing us, because if they wanted to, they could kill whoever they wanted, as many populations as they felt like. They're doing all kinds of experiments, and by they, I mean people who are higher than we are on the pyramid of execution of programs in the world. And there's a lot of observation going on. They're watching biology battle with and grapple with all kinds of assaults and indignities, some of which are accidental and some of which are not accidental. And there is a culling that takes place right there, because not every life form, not every specimen in every species is going to keel over and die from some indignity that it has to sustain in terms of its biology. There's an adaptation tendency in biological life, and we adapt as best we can. And some of us have more reserves than others, and so we may adapt better, we may last longer, and others of us are too weak to do the, you know, the grappling with whatever it is, and we'll just die. And all that is being observed. And so the forms that, these individual forms that prevail will be those that may be used in the succession of prototype making for what they call, in terms of our species, Homo evolutus. We're not Homo sapien any longer. We're moving toward an evolved human form that, as we're learning, is going to be integrated with machine forms. This is the AI future. So those who can manage to tolerate, for instance, an environment full of Wi-Fi and radio frequency signals, microwaves, which are very harmful to biological tissues, but there will be those people who will not ultimately be eliminated by all this, and they may be the best specimens to be integrated with robotics.
So it may be a form of unnatural selection, if you will, kind of stress out what's perceived as the weaker organisms, and whoever's left will be integrated seamlessly into this AI robotic agenda.
That's a very good way of saying it. Yeah, an excellent way of putting it, the unnatural selection. I mean, if you just look at working out, for instance, the way that people get stronger physically is to tax a muscle, break it down, make it hurt and sore, and, you know, kill off a lot of its cells so that the regeneration process takes place and regrowth. And if you look at weightlifters and the giant muscles they have, you can see that the puny form they started with has managed to evolve under stress and extreme stress into this magnificent bulging thing, right? So that's a deliberate, very sequential, serial a strengthening by attack.
Now, you mentioned the term earlier, I think it was transbiology, and you use another term that had biology in it. What do you mean by that? And you know, what have you found about the organisms today? What's been going on with them that would, you know, lead you to believe that there's some kind of changes afoot?
Well, we already are seeing transgender around.
Oh yes, oh yes.
So trans simply means over or across. So there's something going on where people are, part of it is a social program, a social engineering and conditioning. People are beginning to embrace this idea of blurred gender lines. And there's also something going on biochemically, hormonally in us. I mean, we are certainly seeing an explosion of men who are being born now and growing up who are very effeminate. And we're being told that, oh, you know, lots of people are gay and they just never could come out with it. It was verboten. But I believe that with the amount of estrogen mimicry going on in the personal care world, the plastic explosion around us, plastics, the molecules of polymers, here we go again, are very similar to the molecule estrogen. So in the case of integrating plasticizing properties and agents into personal care products, for instance, shampoos that look all silky and make your hair feel and look glossy, they have plasticizers in them, as do all kinds of things. Plastics, you can just look around you and you'll be able to see 100 different plastic items, I'm sure. But these plastics, these chemicals used to rigidify or make polymer more fluid, they are shaped like the estrogen molecule. And so when bodies are full of those shapes of molecules, the biology in that organism thinks that it is testosterone, it blocks testosterone. It thinks that it's the presence of estrogen, but it's not. It's a harmful chemical. So we're seeing a rise in reproductive cancer rates in women. That's how these plasticizers harm women, these estrogenic shaped molecules. And we're also seeing a feminization of men because testosterone is blocked because the body thinks it has estrogen in it. So you have to understand that men's bodies make some female hormone and male hormone, more male hormone than female, and vice versa. Female bodies do make a little bit of testosterone and androgens. So it's a very confusing thing. And I have gone out on a limb and I'm saying that we are seeing an explosion of males who are not fully formed or finished males. And this happens in the womb.
Yes. Janice Barcelo talked about the malign effects of ultrasound and how, well, you know, expectant parents want to know the sex of their child, so the ultrasound technician blasts the genitalia of the developing baby. Oh, it's going to be a boy. Well, and another thing Janice and I talked about is when the face of the baby shows up in the ultrasound, what a lot of parents interpret as the baby waving and saying hi, it's really the baby trying to cover its face because it's getting blasted. So it can feel the effects of the ultrasound. It starts spinning around doing cartwheels because it's in distress. And as Janice pointed out, if they keep aiming the ultrasound at the genitalia of the babies, especially for males, it's going to cause some problems further down the line.
Well, that could be part of it, but I think there's much more to it than that. Because if you really look at gestation, all babies are female as they originate, even if they are formed by a sperm carrying a male chromosome. So babies are XY or XX in terms of their male or female gender. And yet it's in the seventh week of pregnancy that a male baby begins to develop as a male. So those first 6 weeks, the reason they don't even bother with ultrasounds in those first 6 weeks is because you wouldn't be able to tell. You'd think it was a girl. But the genitalia start to form in that seventh week of pregnancy, after which it is the job of the Y chromosome to start shaping the male form, which includes the male brain and so forth. And if the mother's body is rife with estrogen mimicking molecules because she's in a world of plastic and she uses personal care products that are full of plasticizers, then the message getting to the developing male form is, look, we're a girl. Here's a bunch of estrogen. We're not producing testosterone. It's getting the wrong signal. So what's happened with the plastics in our world is that since the 90s even, and before, we have seen a much higher number of male baby stillbirths, male baby miscarriages, and hermaphrodites being born. Hermaphrodites being babies that are mixed in their gender. They have the genitals of both, male and female, or some variation thereof. And that's telling you that the body itself, when it does a stillbirth or a miscarriage, it's rejecting babies that are gonna come out not right. There's something that didn't work out. And the rate of males being ejected this way is startling. So something is being done to the male form in development that is harming it. And the numbers of alpha males, I mean, when did you last see an alpha male? They're like not around anymore.
They don't show them in cinema anymore or in TV shows. The males they typically depict are effeminate, vacillating, wishy-washy, waffling back and forth. And like in the latest Star Trek that's come out in Netflix, it's all the strong characters are women. The males are depicted in, I hate to use the term, but in more secretarial type roles. They seem effeminate. They speak with high voices. The only male that has a really speaking part thus far in the first few episodes I've seen is this vacillating, wishy-washy alien male. So even in the TV shows, the males are routinely depicted as either gay, effeminate, or just vacillating weaklings.
Well, that's the social engineering aspect coming again, the modeling to society. But if you look around, carpenters, contractors, people in construction who previously were strong alpha males, they are now very effeminate. They're fat, they're bald. They have man boobs, they giggle, they have been feminized. And we're not seeing a culture that is raising alpha males, sons who are alpha. I don't see those anymore. I don't see alpha male teenagers. I don't see their fathers as alphas any longer. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I agree. I've spoken to people that are in the construction business, that are tradesmen, and they talk about the young males that are coming to them as apprentices or coming to them as temporary help. It's they're distracted. They're constantly looking at their Facebook wall. They can't make eye contact. Their eyes are down towards their shoes. They're kind of mumbling. They can't speak up for themselves. So there's something going on with the development of the babies. There's something going on with the hormonal imbalance. And now what we're seeing also is the gender studies, so-called, that are being forced upon the children in grade school, where they're being told that you're not really a boy, you're a girl. You're not really a girl, you're a boy. Wouldn't you like to know what it's like to have a vagina, a little boy? So they're really pushing this transgender agenda at an earlier and earlier age. And the problem that you just pointed out, without alphas, without male alphas, what we're going to have is a society of male weaklings, and we're already starting to see that, of pushovers that won't stand up and protect themselves, won't stand up, protect their families. And I think that's what the system wants. They want a bunch of vacillating, weak, effeminate males because they offer no potential for resistance at all.
The other issue about the weaker, more feminine males is that their sperm count is going to be dismally low, and their chances of reproducing are going to be very, very low. And so they are pushing reproduction that's now an act of free will between people into the laboratory. So people will have to have laboratory-assisted reproduction, which means reproduction that has the partnership of the state. If your baby making moves into labs and artificial wombs, you're going to have to possibly take some kind of test to be qualified as a parent, to be assessed as a qualified parent. And maybe that the state joins in the raising of your child because it helped with the conception and gestation of the child. We don't really know. And, you know, they're going to model all of this in movies and television so that we see this as extremely creative and helpful. The scientific solutions that are rolling out are extremely wondrous. That's what they want people to think, and that we need these solutions. So it's that Hegelian setup that a problem is encountered, whether it's artificially engineered or not, and people are led to believe that this is evolution, not deliberate engineering. So the problem that is created will then be offered a solution. And there will be a lot, you know, time period during which the public remains nice and confused, and there's all this back and forth between pro and con groups, and then a solution will be rolled out. And that's how they push gradual change. And the change rolls down through and across generations. So those who are adamantly opposed to something will eventually not survive, and it will be their descendants, their grandchildren, who will be contending with the change, and they won't mind it so much because they will have been raised in a culture that already loves it.
The powers that be, they think in terms of decades, centuries, and millennia, whereas most people have been conditioned to think and project out no further than the next paycheck, such as the efforts at limiting the vision and the belief in one's destiny that the powers that be have foisted upon the public. Another issue that's all part of this is by pushing this cultural Marxism, this fragmentation and destruction of the family. We've already seen this, Sophia, in the black community, where so many children are raised without fathers, so many males don't have a proper male modeling because they're in broken homes. They live in families where they have siblings from other fathers, etc. So there's no cohesion there. There's no family identity. And we're seeing that also in the greater community, not just in the black community, where this fragmentation process, this effort at destroying the family unit, family identity, is really coming into play. And it ties into what you just talked about, because when you have people that don't see themselves as a unified whole, as a family integrated unit, then it's easier for the state to move in and just mold their, you know, the minds of these people, especially the young.
Yeah, you know, last night I had the good fortune to see To Kill a Mockingbird, the movie with...
Oh, classic, yes.
Yeah, after the novel by Harper Lee, which I don't think I even read. Somehow I missed that. And I was pretty amazed by this movie. It was definitely about racial material in it, but it was about a father who was a single parent. That was the lawyer, Atticus Finch, played by Gregory Peck, and the two small children, and the Robinson, the black guy who was accused of having raped this, farmer's daughter, and then the trial that ensued, And it was a fascinating film. And yeah, there were things in that movie that, again, modeling single parenting. I don't know when this movie was made. It had to have been made, I would guess. Gregory Peck was older, so do you know the year it was made? But anyway, it reflected a time period that was probably the 40s. But they were sinking their teeth into this material, good and early. You know,
yes,
you
yes.
already had a little girl who was a tomboy who didn't want to wear her dress to school. It was really, really fascinating. And I'm watching a lot of these older movies, and I'm marveling at how they just baked in the structure of the debates that ensued over the next decades. They really worked it into movies. And people thought that this was a fascinating plot at the time. Oh, this is different. You must go and see this film because it's different. You know? I mean, remember when Philadelphia came out? It was
yes.
a movie about AIDS.
And
people thought, oh, this is cool. This is different. You have to see this because you'll learn more about homosexuality and AIDS. And then, of course, Hollywood has access to the greatest talent, you know, from cinematography to editing to music to stars. And it's just sickening how they've worked the public mind over the decades. And they've presented this very delicious food in the form of, you know, supremely crafted motion pictures with themes that are designed to really confuse us and ultimately get us to move along with changes.
Yes, if memory serves, one of the movies that were either up for an Academy Award or had won an Academy Award depicted a sexual relationship between an older man and an underage young boy of about 17 years old. So it's an example of Hollywood pushing these memes onto the public in concert with the intentional hormonal imbalance, the intentional social engineering beginning at the schools. In the time we got left in the first segment, Sophia, what can we as a society do about this transgender agenda? I should point out that, and I shouldn't even have to make these disclaimers, but you and I were both from San Diego. We've known a lot of gay people. I live smack dab in a gay community. I had a lot of gay friends. I think that it's similar in a way to the heterosexual community. Most of the heterosexual community is completely oblivious to any of this stuff we've been talking about. And I think the same thing pertains to the gay community. I don't think that a lot of the gays know what's being done in their name. I think that, oh, same-sex marriage, let's go for it. I think that some of them would be appalled at all this social engineering and the sexualization of children that's going on. But, you know, having said that much, Sophia, what could we do as a society to keep, you know, society, family, civilization intact?
Well, you know, I don't know how many minutes we have left. Just give me an idea. How many minutes on this?
Oh,
first
yeah, just, yeah, 10 minutes. Just let it
okay.
rip.
So I know someone who's a professor at a major UC, University of California branch. And he is also a dean. And he told me that students come into his office, male students, and they're anywhere from, you know, 18, 19, 20, whatever. And they sit down and they cry. And they tell him that they don't know what they are. They don't feel attracted to anyone. They're totally confused. They don't know if they're a male or not. They're miserable. They're crying in his office. They're having a life crisis, an identity crisis. And that breaks my heart because that tells me that what they're feeling is too profound to be solved easily. You know, they're in the corridor of transition. There's a biological transition going on that they're feeling as individual human beings. And in the context of the society they're living in, it's terribly painful and confusing. So you ask, what can we do as a society? Right now, I don't know what kind of society we are. I see all sorts of pockets in the society. But what I do see the society not doing is having meaningful interrelationships and discussions. People are so shallow. Everything discussed is facile, quick, you know, one-liners, laughs, jokes. People are not relating in a meaningful way to each other. Families are not doing it. They're too busy with their activities. And couples are not doing it because each of them has their own thing. And when there is a, you know, a deep talk, it's usually because they're having some kind of problem, because that's another thing Hollywood has done and the literary world. They have driven a big wedge between men and women. So there's so much confusion that it's not easy to say what we as a society should do. Everyone is an individual, and I think it is important for individuals to look around them critically and start thinking about what they're seeing and start listening to our kinds of shows and discussions if they want a little food for thought. You know, there was someone who told me yesterday, a new customer, because I have an online store and I sell a lot of things that I have discovered that have made my life much better. And he had approached me and we had a phone conversation, and he said he used to listen to Coast to Coast. I mean, he was addicted to it. And I can understand that. But then he said it got boring because he realized it took years, but he realized that he wasn't learning anything new from Coast to Coast. But he didn't know where else to go. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yes.
And you and I would go, what do you mean you don't know where else to go? So Coast to Coast is, but Coast to Coast had him locked up. And that's what's happened to people. They've gotten locked up in the, you know, mundanity of the menu that they're eating from every day. And they don't know how to find us.
Well, we see the same thing with the info warriors that go to InfoWars. They top out at that level of understanding, which, you know, at the core of it is hopelessness, despair, impotent rage, and just the reinforcement of all things negative, all things overwhelming. And now they've totally regressed, where Alex Jones was one of the first to talk about the false left-right paradigm. Now when you go on there, I only go on there just to read the headlines. It's all the Democrats said this, the Democrats said that. They've really regressed. And so what they've done is they've captured a large part, a large demographic of people, some of whom may have been on the verge of taking their awareness to another level, right? But now they're kind of stuck, like the guy that was stuck in Coast to Coast for a long time. Really sad in many ways. And sad about the young men going into the chancellor's office or the dean's office and crying, because that's what we're seeing, Sophia. These gender-confused males vacillating, weak. And I'm not being critical of them. I'm not making a value judgment of them. But it's just symptomatic of this mass hormonal manipulation, this mass social engineering that's going on.
Definitely. It's very, very sad. And, you know, in the old days, if you were a little boy, your parents, and you fell down, if you were three or four, your parents picked you up, brushed you up, and said, boys, don't cry. And today, I don't know that parents would say that anymore, but these boys are definitely crying. They're crying inside. They're crying in a way that they can't really express to anyone. And I'm sure if they said this to their parents wouldn't know what the hell to do, you know? So it's not being discussed in the families of these children. And the parents are being urged to force, as you mentioned earlier, gender curiosity. I read about some woman in Australia who had sent off to America for something that I'll just call a pack. It was like a groin pack. And this is a little thingamabob, like a sock, but it's, you know, some kind of puffy thing that you put in a girl's pants, so that this mother wrote online that she wanted her transitioning daughter, who was interested in being a boy to go to school and have a bulge in her shorts like the other boys.
Oh,
and
geez.
She had bought this from America.
Yeah, and what we're seeing also is this gender confusion being pushed increasingly in children's books, vulgarity, sexualization, even inferences of bestiality with animals that's showing up in children's books. So they've got it all going on. Well, we've had a fascinating, thought-provoking discussion in this first segment with Sophia Smallstorm. Sophia, how could our listeners find you, and could you give us your website address?
Yeah, my blog is Sophia with an F, S-O-F-I-A, smallstorm.com, and I post things, thought-provoking things. Somebody wrote to me recently, very thought-provoking. So anyway, do go there, and you will see a link to my store, avatarproducts.com. I love my online store. I love sharing the things I've found. They're simple, inexpensive, and they work. And I call this a bioremediation platform. So please visit Avatar, like the movie Avatar, but I have the name first, avatarproducts.com and sophiasmallstorm.com. Thank you for listening.
For our dear listeners out there, if you like what we do, if you believe in what we do, please go to thecosmicswitchboard.com, sign up and become a member, and we'll see you at the top of the next segment.